That's the funniest part is when he says something that he knows is inappropriate, and he goes into this long, wheezy laugh.
What the hell was it? Was that a falcon? No.
Hello and welcome to The Greaties, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. The focus of today's podcast is 1987's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, written and directed by John Hughes and starring Steve Martin and John Candy. My name is Dave. Our illustrious panel of 80s experts includes Christy.
Those aren't pillows. There, got it out.
Matt.
$6 in my right nut says Chris says something inappropriate.
Steve.
Well, it's about time you guys have me back on. Thanks.
And Chris.
I never seen a guy get picked up by the testicles before.
Well, we like to start every show by having each panelist reflect on their past experience with the movie so we can see where everyone is coming from. So, Christy, what is your history with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Never have I ever seen this film before last night.
I was going to say, and neither for this stupid show.
No, I saw it. I saw it last night. It was the first time. I've seen snippets of it. Because it's so highly quoted and snippetized. Shut up, it's a word. But I'd never actually seen the movie all the way through. Or at all.
How about you, Matt?
This is another one I saw on videotape a few years after it was out. I think I just remember seeing it advertised and going, oh, it's two middle-aged men. What do I want to see that for? That can't be funny. And then when I did see it, I was like, oh, well, I was wrong. I'm pleasantly surprised. And have watched it a few times since then and certainly enjoyed watching it this time again.
Steve?
Well, like a lot of things from that time, this was foisted on me by my mom and dad, much like their hatred of Bruce Springsteen and their love of the Grateful Dead. So, yeah, I hate those things, love Grateful Dead, and I love this movie thanks to their tyranny.
What about
That's
you,
That's a
Chris?
Nice story.
Yeah, tyranny.
Touching, really touching. I think I saw it like Matt did, maybe on tape or on cable afterwards, but I never got on board when it was out, but I liked it.
Yeah, I guess we're in the same boat. Rated R, 1987. Wasn't seeing a lot of R-rated movies, but it's the same kind of thing. Once it's on cable and you get hooked into a movie like this, you're hooked in, at least for a lot of people, forever. This was a panelist pick, and it was my pick. I chose this movie because I thought it would be something nice to watch over Thanksgiving. Being a Thanksgiving movie, I watch it every Thanksgiving. And not just at Thanksgiving. I mean, I watch it a lot more than that. So,
4th of July.
Groundhog Day. Flag Day.
Arbor Day.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
That song that we were just listening is playing right now.
Yes.
Was that like a single release from the movie, or was that just like appropriated for the movie?
Well, it's the version that's in the movie is a little bit different. This is Paul Young, who pretty much sucks. But you like Paul Young, Christy?
I did when I was in high school. Until I found out he stole everything, because this is actually a Hall & Oates song.
Right. He just seemed to re-record.
She also owns all three A-ha albums, so there speaks volumes of her musical taste.
I also own Hall & Oates' Greatest Hits 2 CD set. Yeah.
Wow. One's blank.
Hopefully you can record music you'd actually listen to again on...
See, that Paul Young song, I always thought he was saying you take a piece of meat with you when I was three. And that's not like a lame joke. I really thought that.
Mimi's hungry.
Well, it just seemed the thing to do, you know, especially if you're leaving early.
That's actually a really good idea.
Anyway, I don't mean to derail everything. I just wanted to get that out of the way.
No, that's okay. But I think at least I do, and I know Steve does, has a penchant for Steve Martin. So
yes.
Anything I could get my hands on that was Steve Martin when I was young, and to this day, I'm going to be watching it. What do you guys, where does Steve Martin rank on your funny guys list?
Oh my God, he's a goddamn genius.
Now he's naked.
Here's a weird thing that I'm a fan of, and I think Christy is too. Unfortunately, this is not on the show, but we had a pretty lengthy discussion about stage plays before we started recording, He has written one of my favorite stage plays.
Picasso.
Yep, that's the one. I love that play.
And he wrote one of my favorite novels.
Shop Girl?
Hell no. No, The Pleasure of My Own Company. That was the second one. It was after Shop Girl.
Oh, I thought that was about masturbation.
Mm. No. Only for Chris.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned that he is an accomplished author along with the movie career and the screenwriting. And I know that Steve and I have read several of his books, including his last one, Born Standing Up. Steve, you're a comedian, so he must be an inspiration to you in many respects, I would think.
He's an absolute inspiration, even though my particular style is not much like his, not with all the, you know, physical and visual stuff and absurdity. But other than that, yeah, he's a huge influence.
And our semi-regular panelist, Tim, managed to piss him off. So there's a connection there.
That's true.
Yep.
When's that?
At a performance at the Grand Ole Opry, Steve Martin also has a music career with the banjo. And Steve interrupted a sound check. Or Tim interrupted a sound check and was scolded over it.
Tim was the jerk on that one.
He said,
"All I need is this banjo."
Steve Martin called him a fuckhead 18 times.
Well, this I always appreciated too. And Matt, you're a big fan of Canadian comedy. I always enjoyed it when the Saturday Night Live SCTV crossovers kind of happened.
Oh yeah,
and in something like this or something like Ghostbusters, where it was Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, but also Harold Ramis and Rick Moranis. I mean, I love this kind of stuff. So, and I believe this happened several times with John Hughes and John Candy. I guess the first time being in the original Vacation, which was another Saturday Night Live SCTV crossover as far as Chevy Chase and John Candy.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. And Eugene Levy, to a degree.
Right, right. So I used to love that kind of stuff. You must have watched a lot of SCTV when you were...
Oh, absolutely. And John Candy has some of the more memorable characters. In fact, to this day, whenever we hear the word 3D, Christy and I refer to I can't remember his character's name, unfortunately, the 3D movie host he used to play. He used to just, you know, like, go, went right into the camera.
Right. Yeah, I would love it when they would do stuff like this. And this is our second John Hughes movie. Much to Chris's dismay.
And the better one, too.
Yeah, you're not a John Hughes guy. Don't know how.
Only that one famous one.
The Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of the beginning of a period of John Hughes for adults. This
After Dark.
Yeah. Both this and She's Having a Baby were made pretty much at the same time. In fact, they said there's a few times where there's a movie playing on the televisions during Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and the movie is She's Having a Baby, and the movie wasn't even out yet.
Yeah.
Huh.
And Kevin Bacon's appearance as the taxi racer at the beginning
of
the movie.
Yes.
So John Hughes kind of got into out of the teenage kind of stuff a little bit, although Some Kind of Wonderful would follow. But this was like a more grown-up John Hughes, and then he would devolve into just writing kids' movies.
Love them.
Yeah.
Home Alone.
So you prefer the kids' movies than the teenage movies?
Correct.
Why am I not surprised?
Did he do Baby's Day Out?
Yeah. He wrote it.
He did?
He did, really?
Yeah. Well, he had started his career doing more adult. I mean, he wrote Mr. Mom.
Love it.
And he wrote Vacation.
Love it.
Oh, I love Vacation. Yeah.
So, I don't know
how. In fact, I think it's about time to watch Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, yeah, yes it is. 'Tis the season.
That's true. And you also get a lot of the John Hughes players, I would like to call them in this. The guys that show up in all of his movies.
The not ready for Baby's Day Out players.
And the monkey.
His boss is the dad from She's Having a Baby, and his friend John is Ferris's dad. You'll never make the six. Edie McClurg, Ben Stein, kind of like Kevin Smith and Adam Sandler, and even Richard Donner we talked about when we did Goonies. It seems like they use the same group of friends in all the movies. I always appreciated that. It's like he's true to his roots or something. Yeah.
It's really to save money.
That's
it. Yeah, he puts a clause in their original contract that obligates them to be in every film at his whim for the rest of the career.
Well, the question I want to ask you guys is, do you think that this is the best thing that John Candy ever did?
No.
That's no.
I liked some of his other stuff. I liked the what's the one where he's the policeman and he falls in love with Ally Sheedy?
Dangerous, Armed and Dangerous?
No.
Who's Harry Crumb?
It's the one with the
Who's Harry Crumb?
Who's Harry Crumb?
Is that the one?
I think so. Where he's got
the
mother.
Or
no, it is Only the Lonely.
Yeah.
Or is that the one where he is like writing a
That's Only the Lonely.
Okay.
Well, see, just even trying to figure out which one was better, we came up with seven different examples. So maybe that answers the question.
I gotta say that other than the TV series Camp Candy that was on Saturday mornings, and A Voice in the Rescuers Down Under. Aside from those, can I just go out on a limb and say that this and Uncle Buck were probably his finest performances?
I was thinking Uncle Buck immediately when Dave asked that question.
Well, they're both funny, but also there's like a little dramatic underbelly, but it's nothing too schmaltzy, and shows the man's range.
And Splash.
Yeah, he was actually good.
Yeah. Splat, too.
And I just love a lot of his SCC TV stuff as well.
Yeah.
And Canadian Bacon was awesome.
Well, it's funny that you bring up the dramatic part of this, because I think that after this movie, people saw him in a different way. Some of the scenes in this movie are incredibly gut-wrenching, especially with him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not to jump to the end, but the last shot we see of him was... I don't remember it affecting me as much as it did last night when I watched it.
Right. How did you feel, Christy, seeing it for the first time? Did you expect it to be as dramatic as it is?
No, I don't. I could kind of guess that there was something not quite right. But what I find the most surprising is that even though he annoys the living crap out of you through the whole movie, you actually do care. Like, I actually do feel bad that he doesn't have a family. But part of me is like, why was he going to Chicago then?
Exactly. Like, why was he, like, in a taxi going? Like, where was he going?
Yeah.
If he had nowhere to go.
And he was still going to Chicago.
Obviously to assassinate someone.
I remember bury the body that was in that trunk that we never saw the inside of.
I remember that the first time I saw this and laughed the whole way through. And at the end, it's like almost like a shocking ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow.
So, Christy, we saw this all as teenagers or what have you, and then we kind of knew it. And it's always something you've taken for granted when watching the movie. Not having seen it before, was this like a twist ending, if you want to call it that, to you?
Maybe not necessarily a twist ending, but just not. It was nice to have something deep to it instead of being yuck, yuck, yuck. What goes wrong? Ha ha ha. It was kind of nice because that is the one thing that kind of made it more real. Because life isn't a bunch of yucks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the other thing that always I thought was great about it was that Steve Martin is really the straight man in this movie, and he doesn't normally do that. And he's very dramatic at times. It's a very serious role, but the more serious and enraged he becomes, the funnier the movie becomes.
I think I find him funnier in those situations than like earlier when he's the – well, I don't know, apart from the jerk, but – like that. This is a great example of it. Bowfinger and Leap of Faith are two that also come to mind. Where I think it's like when he is his character is the roots of his character is a straight man, and then he has these moments of whatever you want to call them, these breakaway moments for his character. I think that's even funnier than some of his when he's straight comedy all the way through the movie.
Though I have to say that I really did sympathize with him when he went to Edie McClurg, because I'm like, I have had those moments. Fucking car.
Well, it's funny they bring up Bowfinger. Steve and I are both pretty big fans of Bowfinger, I think, and it's I hadn't really realized the similarities between those two, but they're right. Definitely there.
I got to think about that one. I don't know if it's
trying to hold it all together.
Bowfinger's a little goofier. Well, a lot goofier, actually.
Right. He's still trying to hold everything together when everything around him is falling apart. and yeah. his frustration well, yeah, comes through.
Yeah, probably not as serious in that, but he's also not the jerk, as it were, in that too. So that's probably more of a middle ground.
Right.
Do you think that not that I'm the one to ask the questions here, but is the intention to make eventually Neil Page to actually be kind of disliked by the audience because eventually he's just ganging up on Dell for no good reason?
I think so, definitely. Because you can't, I mean, as the audience, you can't feel anything but love and appreciation for Dell Griffith. But were you in the situation that Neil Page is, you might act just like him.
Uh-huh.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't mean to say no good reason. There's good reasons to like dislike the guy, but Neil becomes such like a towering can of rage.
Mm-hmm. He sets the freaking ugly car on fire. That made me laugh.
That you're like a kid on Christmas morning right now.
That is the butt ugliest car I've ever seen.
It was a family truckster, but not the station wagon version.
It did remind me of the family truckster. And those scenes where they're driving around in the burnout car is just totally ripped off. Not that maybe it's ripped off / homage in Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
With the two of them and the burned out car with the deer and the whole nine yards. Well, he has...
Mike McKean when he was skinny.
Yeah. There's three, I think, at least two, maybe three major freakouts that Steve Martin has. It's like he someone just said, he's trying to keep it together, but then he reaches his boiling point and he has this freakout. And the first one is really where you get one of your first dramatic scenes when he attacks Dell.
And he just
he just lays into him and
Dell's just staring at him with his big doggy eyes.
you just feel horrible.
Yeah.
But John Hughes then follows that up with probably the most memorable scene in the movie, and maybe one of the most memorable scenes in any comedy.
Yeah.
In fact, the DVD version that I think at least Chris and I watched is the "Those Aren't Pillows" edition.
Yeah. You don't want to see what the bookends are that come with that edition.
But he cuts the tension nicely there, I think, because that's a pretty heavy scene.
It is, but I think it has one of the best sound effects when they first go to bed and you hear him scratching his balls. and you hear the hair and the balls being scratched. Cracks me up.
That scene is so well set up. I mean, it starts out with it being one bed. There's no hot water. There's no towels. The sheets are wet because the beer can vibrated. And then the scratching. He cracks his knuckles. He cracks his neck. And then he snorts to clear his sinuses.
Yes.
And that's just the breaking point.
Yeah.
It almost like looks like all just improv. Just him just coming up with ideas, you know?
Yeah. Well, did you watch the documentary then? On the DVD?
I did, but I dozed off during it.
Way to do research, Chris.
It was really great. It was from back then, and all it was they had set up a little fake airport terminal, and it was just John Candy, Steve Martin, and John Hughes on a stage just talking.
Oh, cool.
So if you ever get this, it's really worth watching. And somebody asked Steve Martin to summarize the film, and he summarized it as two guys meet, they have some laughs, they part. That was his summary of the movie. So it was just great to watch those three guys, whom I at least know I respect, on the same stage, just talking about this awesome movie. But I mean, we've all said pretty nice things about the movie. Are there any criticisms at all that anyone has of the movie?
You know, there were a couple of points where I said, oh, that was, I would think that wasn't, you know, necessary, or maybe that wasn't funny, or I don't know why they did that. But I don't even remember what they were at this point, because they're just overshadowed by so much other good stuff. So I didn't bother writing them down, and I certainly don't remember them. So I, off the top of my head, now I don't really have any real complaints. I'm sure there's stuff I could complain about, but can't remember them. Mm.
The wife needs to brush her hair. That's all I had to complain about, is she needs to brush her damn hair.
Well, it's a sign of a good movie, I guess, if nobody can really come up with a great... This movie's highly quotable. I mean, people walk around saying quotes from this all the time.
Maybe that's my complaint.
Okay.
Get tired of hearing quotes about it. Quotes from
it. Misquotes, because, you know, people always fuck up the quotes. That's not a folded comforter. No. Fuck that up there, buddy.
I guess if I have a criticism of it, there's the scene where they need to make some money. And Dell sells the shower curtain rings as earrings. And for some reason, that always bothered me because they always portray him as he's a salesman. But everybody that he meets, even though they seem to be rejects, they all love and admire him. And now he's just straight up lying to people because he's saying how one's an autographed Daryl Strawberry earring and one's filled with helium. It doesn't seem that it's in his nature that he would lie to people like this just to make money. That scene always kind of bothered me.
I always took it like that's what salespeople do. Like, car salespeople, they'll lie to you just to make a sale.
You both have valid points.
So even though he's Del Griffith and a lovable guy, he's still a liar.
I think, you know, just like a car salesperson, just will tell you anything to make the sale. That's it.
I remember thinking, you magnificent son of a bitch, that whole sequence.
I kind of remember wondering why who the hell would care about Daryl Strawberry autographed earrings.
Yeah, a girl wouldn't. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and then they also after that they decide that they should Steve Martin decides they should separate, and there's another kind of very poignant scene where it's so uncomfortable but so well acted where they're, you know, John Candy's gonna pay the bill and he's just his feelings have been hurt a second time.
Yeah.
And that builds, I think, throughout the movie. So, but then Christy mentioned the other scene. The other most famous scene from the movie is the rental car scene. And that would be, I think, freak out number two. And this is like an all-timer.
Yeah.
This is classic.
They said on the research that I did that had this scene not been in the movie, it might have been rated PG.
Yeah, well, I believe it.
You're probably right, yeah.
But he says the F word 18 times in a minute.
And it's so awesome.
After my own heart.
So this is a lot of people's favorite scene. And hearing the documentary, Steve Martin said I always often wonder how much of the script actors read. He admitted that he read two scenes. He read the scene where he's adjusting the car seat in the rental car that they finally get. And he read this scene and he agreed to do the movie.
That's nice. Just how Sam Jackson agreed to do Snakes on a Plane.
What do they play, do you think, like on TV when it's being aired?
That's a good question.
You know what? Damn it. And I know I've seen this on TV and I saw that scene and like was laughing at what they did. But damned if I can't remember what the hell they did. Shit. Flipping, I think. I think it was
times?
Flipping now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I want a flipping car and I want it flipping. I think it was flipping.
That's great. That's classic right there.
I would like to see that.
Of course, they use like a 500-pound black man's voice for it. I want a flipping car.
Well, once I get the car, one of the greatest scenes in the movie is John Candy while Steve Martin's asleep playing the piano and doing to the mess around by Ray Charles. It's just so amazing and how talented he was and what a shame it is that he's dead.
Yeah.
Did John Candy have kids?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Because I know he was married. But I don't remember if he had kids.
I don't know.
It'd be interesting to see if that was hereditary.
Right.
You know, I have to admit, I don't know if Chris even knows this, but John Candy is one of the reasons I quit smoking, because whenever I think about quitting smoking, which I have now, I think about, you know, talented people that have died too soon because of different health reasons, and John Candy is one of the top of the list that always motivate me to quit smoking, and this scene reminded me of that fact.
Wow. He obviously replaced his cigarette habit with another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't, I mean, he was heavy in this, but he wasn't as heavy as he would be
later on.
Canadian bacon. Wagons East. All right. And then you get freak out number three when the car explodes and Steve Martin's learned that his credit card was the one that was used to rent the car.
And he shakes them just like back and forth, like so comical. They're amazing.
Well, and then from that point on, I think there's a turning point where they do get a hotel room, and Del is talking to his wife, who you still think is alive, while he sits in the cold, and Neil invites him in, and they bond in the hotel room.
Yeah.
From that point on, it's pretty dramatic for the most part. And later on, we're going to do our top five comedy duos. And being the only person that's seen all the lists, they are not on any of our lists. And I'm wondering if it's because I'd say the last third of this movie's a drama.
There are not any enough movies, I think, to really...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's two reasons for me. One, what Chris just said, which I'm sorry. Talked right over you, Chris. There.
No, no, that's fine.
But yeah, they haven't done, you know, many movies together. And I also tend to not consider the movie we're talking about when I do my list.
Okay. So that was disqualified for you from the beginning.
Sort of. I mean, I don't consciously think that, but I certainly think that plays enough factor when I do my list.
Hmm. All right. Well... If we're flash forwarding ahead here to the denouement of the movie, super serious again. He finally gets to Chicago and they say goodbye, and there's another real touching scene where Steve Martin says, "You got me home a little late, but I'm a little wiser," and they hug. Was anyone weeping at this point?
Yeah.
Ow, that warned me. If you're going to do that again, Chris, that hurt.
I apologize. Yeah, I was.
Yeah. Christy, what about you? You're seeing it for the first time?
I got a little choked up. Not openly weeping like Chris, but no, I got choked up.
Because at that point, Steve Martin's train is there, and he's still not getting on it because he doesn't want to really say goodbye to him. They're standing on the platform. It's great writing, great acting, and great directing.
And that song!
You have to listen to it again.
What I don't understand is how the train got back so fast.
Right.
Or did he get on another train?
I think he got on another train.
He had to get on another train.
Okay.
He had to get on one that was going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, because he's sitting on the train. He's thinking about home. But as he's thinking about home, the thoughts of Del keep creeping into his mind. And it's at that point he figures it out. I don't know why he figures it out at that point.
Yeah. That is
because he's alone. He probably can sit down and think about it without being bothered by.
Yeah,
but the three major clues that they run past the audience aren't necessarily enough to put that together, in my opinion.
Yeah, I never quite knew how he figured that out.
Dave, if I can answer your question from a moment ago, I had a history of when I saw these movies of missing the point. Like to me, when I was a little kid, Gremlins was a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it terrified me. And I wept. I wept like a little baby because I thought this was a drama at the time.
Right.
I mean, at this point, yeah.
Well, I know that's why I didn't put it on my list. I love both of these guys, but I didn't put it on my list because to me it's a lot more dramatic than anything else I have on my list when we get to it.
Mm. Mm.
And I love it for it. It's fantastic.
The look. I mean, you don't even really see John Candy's face. But the way he hugs Steve Martin says volumes. I mean, you really feel for the guy just in that like 3 second shot. If it's even 3 seconds, it's probably not that long.
Yeah. And carrying the trunk down the street.
Yeah.
Just touching and
it is.
Well done. Is there anyone that anyone knows that doesn't like this movie?
I know.
No, I hadn't thought about it, but no.
I know my wife, Kelly, laughed from again and like non-stop.
Yeah,
laughter.
Yeah, my wife too. It's like one of the movies that I know we can always agree on if we had to pick something.
My first wife didn't like it. That's why I divorced her.
What was his name?
Oh.
It was actually John Hughes' ex-wife, so that explains a lot.
All right. Well, I guess we're about ready to do our reviews. I'm kind of interested to hear, you know, what everybody has to say about this. So, Christy, I know that you had not seen this. So, what is your review of seeing this movie yesterday?
I would have to say it's a very good holiday and in general movie. I would give it a 4.
Excellent. Matt, what about you?
I'm going to have to say the first time I saw it, probably a 4. I was fairly young at the time, and now watching it again, man, I since I haven't given a 5 yet, I'm going to say 4.5 just to save, you know, a 5 for one of those actually, you know, ones that are right. Perfect. Not to say this isn't perfect, but man, I'll say 4.5, but bordering on a 5 for me. I mean, this is seeing it again. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but seeing it as a but maybe by some chance wiser adult, or at least more experienced adult, great movie. So 4.5 for me.
Steve, what about you? Your original viewing as a younger nubile boy, and your current rating.
It's true, I was nubile, but I didn't know you knew about that. Now, any movie that can hold up after 20 plus years and is still quotable deserves a 5. The movie holds up mostly because, well, I mean, performances, first of all, but the problems that it depicts have not changed at all. There's no way that you can say, I mean, maybe there would be security issues that would be added to if you wrote the script today, but fundamentally, the frustrations and inconveniences and hardships of traveling across the country are still there. It holds up.
All right. Chris, what about you?
I think Steve read my notes.
you don't have anything.
Yeah, your spelling's
that,
awful.
You don't have anything that eloquent.
That's exactly what I wrote down. I give it a 4.5 bad back in the day because I think it was just so funny and hearing the word fuck 18 times at that age, terrific. In 2010, with the wife, we did both have a great time watching it. It never gets old. There's never a part where it's boring. I give it a 5. I'm with Steve. 5 stars.
All right, well,
Chris,
yes,
your notes consisted of a post-it notes that said it's fucking awesome. That's really your notes.
Actually, no words. There was pictures. There was a heart, a chicken leg, and a tear.
Are you in the room? Can you see my notes?
Wait, those are his notes for the Phantom Menace.
With the word Misa in front of it.
Yeah. Misa like.
Well, like I said before, this was a panelist pick film, and it was my pick. So I'm glad I picked it. I'm glad that everybody enjoyed it, and I especially enjoyed watching it over Thanksgiving. Back in my initial viewing on cable, 1988-ish, I would have given this a 4 out of 5, and I continue to give it a 4 out of 5. It's such a great movie, and what Steve said is true. This movie could be put out today, even with cell phones and Blackberries, and you still would have had these same problems.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's the only thing that would really change. Instead of the payphones, there would have been cell phones, and the cars would be different. That's really all that would change.
Yep. And the screenplay by Hughes, I think, was so well crafted. And when you hear him talk about it, he says he writes these things in like a weekend.
Yeah, yeah. The guy just sits down and bam, done.
Yeah, and then he spends...
He's slowed down a little.
Aww.
I was like, I've written stuff in a weekend, but you never want to see this on screen. It's so bad.
Well, he said he writes it in like 3 days, and then he does like 20 rewrites. So it's not like he writes it in 3 days and it's done, but he writes it and goes over it and over it. And you can tell the attention to detail is in there because he like just chips away any possibility for these guys to be apart. It would be so easy to watch this movie and go, why doesn't he just leave? Why doesn't he just, you know, find another way home?
Right.
And he covers all of his tracks, and there are no reasons why. And even if they're apart, they end up back together, and it's because of the screenplay and how well it's written.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the acting. Just phenomenal from two guys that you know as comedy, that they can sit there and do these poignant scenes and even make you cry. What an awesome movie. So,
yeah. You know, there's kind of a message in that, I guess. I mean, not to, I may be pointing out the obvious, but, you know, the idea that a stranger or someone that you absolutely on first meeting detest could, if you suffer through the same things, become, you know, your truest friend.
That's how I got married.
That's how you stay alive.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get schmaltzy.
Sorry.
Did anyone see the deleted scene? There's supposedly a 3-hour version of this movie.
I'd actually really like to see that.
I guess Hughes said before he had passed away that, you know, it's in a vault somewhere. It's not edited, and at this point, the film's probably deteriorated to the point where it couldn't be used. But they shot tons and tons of stuff, and there was one deleted scene. And it's not even that the scene's that funny, but just because we haven't seen it before, I was dying laughing on it. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube if you don't have the DVDs. But it's a scene of them on the airplane where they get their food. And there's really nothing to it. It's just the two of them sitting and looking at their dinners, and Steve Martin being unhappy with his dinner and picking over it because that's the way his character is, and John Candy ending up eating his entire dinner.
Mm.
It's just even the deleted scene, you just want to see. I would love to see this 3-hour version of this movie.
Me too. Yep.
So I guess if you have to keep score, there was no chance of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles not holding up. So if you haven't seen it in a while, please check it out and don't wait till next Thanksgiving.
No.
All right. So if that is the case, then I think we're ready for our top 5 segment. And our top 5 list this week are our top 5 comedy duos in movies. And we're going to count it back from 5 to 1. And we will start with Christy. Christy, what's your number 5 all-time comedy duo?
My number 5 reaches back in the way back to Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon in Some Like It Hot. And actually, I had almost forgotten about this movie until I was actually watching the Logo Channel, and they were doing top drag queen movies, and there was Some Like It Hot as a classic up there with Tootsie and Mrs. Doubtfire, but I forgot about how much fun it is to watch that movie.
All right. That's very highbrow for our...
Well, somebody's got to be.
Yes.
Black and white. We don't have too many black and white movies on our list. Isn't that black and white?
I got another one coming up.
Ooh. Stay tuned. All right, Matt, what's your number 5?
I almost accidentally said Sean Astin and Toy Soldiers and realized I had the wrong damn list up. So bear with me a second. I'm pulling the right one up.
Please.
Sean Astin and The Hobbit. So funny together.
Sam and Frodo.
Okay, here we go. Okay, my number 5. One of those movies that, like, you know, I probably saw either with a cousin or a friend, because my parents would have never let me see this. So it has that, you know, secret viewing factor for history for me, and that is Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong in Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke.
How many Cheech and Chong movies were there?
I don't know, you know, because this is the one I remember because of the story I just told, and I, you know, catch when it's on in the, you know, middle of the morning on Comedy Central or some other weird station. I'm not saying I'm not a Cheech and Chong fan. I just haven't gone out of my way to see all the movies, so I don't have an answer to your question.
I remember the brothers.
Corsican.
Corsican, yeah. The Corsican brothers.
That rings a mic.
Nice Dreams is one of them, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So three.
That was three that we know of, yeah.
All right. Well, Steve, that means we're on to you. What is your number 5?
My number 5, and I'm going to go with Jack Black and Kyle Gass. Can't you see he's the man? Ooh. Let me hear you applaud. He is more than a man. Oh my God, that's them. How did you know? So there's not only, I mean, I guess Tenacious D's only had the pick of destiny so far, but I remember them appearing in Cradle Will Rock as they were some kind of vaudeville act, weren't they?
Yeah,
And that was like just before Tenacious D hit it big, so I knew them from their sketches. But, you know, those two guys have great... They mesh well. They should do more things on the big screen. Actually, I think Kyle Gass was a voice in, like, Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, they were in a lot of things, actually. But, like you're saying, they're, like, very small things.
Yeah.
Kyle Gass and Jack Black were both in The Cable Guy. And I guess Kyle Gass was in Year One, which I didn't see. And Shallow Hal, I think he was in, too. but mm-hmm. they're actually in Biodome as Tenacious D.
Really?
Oh, that yeah. far back?
Yeah. I was thinking about putting Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin on my list. they're like playing in the background, like in a park or something, and it's, you know, I guess probably the HBO show had started at that point.
I'm not gonna admit to having seen Biodome.
No,
I deny.
I saw it.
It's not that bad.
It's really not.
It's like
Chris cried all the way through it.
I did.
It's like if
you'll never get out.
Didn't they need air?
It's not a horrible movie.
Nah.
Don't judge, Steve.
Sorry, getting off track. Kyle Gass, Jack Black. It's great.
Okay, Chris, what's your number five?
Number five, that's for me, is people who I used to hate as a young teenager and a kid. But the more I hear the podcasts and just their movies now, Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're just so fucking great, and I don't know why I didn't get on board back when I was a teenager.
You're a late bloomer, Chris.
I am.
What's your favorite one of them?
Probably Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my number five. What is my number five? My number five is sort of similar, but it is not Jay and Silent Bob. It is Dante and Randall, as played by Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson. And the movie that I especially like them in is Clerks 2. Not that they're not funny in the other Kevin Smith movies, but I prefer Dante and Randall to Jay and Silent Bob. And they're infighting. And I think that's a common theme with a lot of these good comedy teams. It's like they fight. Just like Steve Martin and John Candy. There's a lot of fighting that goes on. So that's why they're my number five. I love to watch those guys fight. All right, back to Christy and her number four.
Number four came from, actually, I had never seen a Jackie Chan movie before I met my husband.
Oh.
And he introduced me to Rush Hour. And I think we actually went to see it in the theater, didn't we?
Oh, okay.
Yes, we did.
And I loved it so much that as soon as it came out on DVD, we had to get it.
Really?
Because I can actually stand Chris Tucker through that movie.
Great movie.
Then I got sick of it.
So not the second and third?
The third, so I didn't even, I don't think we even saw the third. Yeah. I think we went to see the second one.
We did see the second, and we're like, look at that.
Wow.
That's a movie.
Look, he only does these movies every 4 years to get a little cash, and then he doesn't do anything.
That's it.
Yeah, he did nothing other than those movies for like a decade.
Money Talks in between there, I think, with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, is that on your list?
I have Money Talks.
It is, actually.
Steve, yeah. Steve, I heard
Money Talks me into doing this script.
Steve, I heard an Oy Vey.
Yeah. Yes, you know what? I wish you'd chosen Rush Hour as the movie, because then we'd probably have some disagreement to hash out. But Christy, I don't know you well enough to criticize your awful taste. I'm just kidding.
And I don't know yours well enough, but I won't be stopped.
She won't stop criticizing your awful taste.
Well, that's the last time Steve will be on the show. I don't think he realizes what kind of power Christy actually wields on this show.
She does.
I have no power.
Christy,
I'm
just
trying to make it interesting.
I described you as the body and soul of this show yesterday.
Body.
Yes, and I heard Chris's chime in. Then I hear body, and then I hear the cat poop.
All right, well, Matt, what is your number four on your list?
My number four is, now, before anyone else groans, I only saw this movie once. I rented it, like, almost by accident. It's like, I picked it up, and I was like, this looks like it might be funny, and then I come home, and I'm like, oh, it's that movie. Well, crap, I already put out my $3 for it. And it made me laugh more than I expected, but I never saw it again, so I don't know if it holds up to second viewing. But because it was such a surprise, I have Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly in Step Brothers.
That movie is hysterical.
It is pretty funny.
It is funny.
Click. I'm still here.
You love John C. Reilly, Steve.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got no problem.
Do you prefer...
I think he was funnier when he had not yet discovered that he was funny.
Right.
But you know, I'm not going to criticize Step Brothers. It's good.
Do you prefer Step Brothers or Talladega Nights?
I prefer Step Brothers.
Shake and bake.
grew tired of Will Ferrell's little sports farce subgenre that he created.
Agree.
For a while.
Yeah, I never saw that basketball one.
It was bad.
Not that good.
So bad.
And then there was like an ice skating one, right?
Yep.
Oh, that was, yeah.
That one did make
moments,
me laugh.
But it wasn't great either. Yeah, I think Talladega Nights is where he peaked on a sports thing. Sweet little 8-pound, 4-ounce baby Jesus.
Chip, I'll come at you like a spider monkey. All right, so who are we up to here? We are up to Steve.
Moi, yes. And you know what? You guys can feel free to attack me for this one. I got to go with Mike Myers and Seth Green.
Well, you lost me at Seth Green.
All right, well, so I got both names in at least. Now, I'm from the Austin Powers movies, and I know it ran its course, and they were just kind of variations on the same theme, but I remember at the time laughing newly with each one, two, and three, and their whole, like, all those exchanges, you know, Dr. Evil shushing Seth Green, and just the fact that it was like, you know, the immersive character actor that Mike Myers is, and Seth Green basically just playing himself. Working and off each other.
That's what he does differently. How? In everything else he does?
Well, now, come on. That's Peter Sellers was acclaimed for decades for doing the same thing. Let's give the guy a little credit. But
I give Peter Sellers a lot of credit, yes.
It's getting a little awkward.
Peter Sellers was a genius. Seth Green is a douche.
No. I was comparing Peter Sellers and Mike Myers.
Oh, now that, I agree. I like Mike Myers. I agree with you, Steve.
You don't, Chris, you like Robot Chicken, don't you? I mean,
only the Star Wars parodies, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mostly.
First one was excellent. Second one was the first one. And I'm sure the third one will be more the same.
Exactly. Did you see that he's...
Well, you know what?
Comedy's
kind of moved on since then, so like we don't accept that kind of, or do we accept that kind of repetition anymore? I don't know, but in the time it worked.
Simpsons and Family Guy are still on, so I guess so.
He's doing a new
Simpsons. Simpsons reinvents itself all the time.
What? Oh, now you know.
I'm gonna have to argue that statement.
Or at least it's so rooted in our culture that it's
like taxes. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Sure. Point of order, Mr. Speaker. The Simpsons is not on trial here.
Sorry, Chris. What were you saying? You were making a point somewhere.
Not really. It was that Seth Green is making a new Star Wars cartoon, I think.
Oh, good.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good.
Some kind of for kids or something. I don't know. That's
Should good. He be allowed, dear kids?
True. I did see him, though, at C4.
Listen, I promise my list gets
He's
better
like
from here.
3'8", right? Isn't he?
He is tiny, man. He is tiny.
You can put him in your pocket.
All right, well,
where are we at now,
I guess it's time for me to quarterback this. Chris, what's your number four?
Number four are two people I think I love them and everything they're in. This song, I love this song. Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, Zoolander, Night at the Museums, Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller. Everything they're in just makes me fucking laugh.
Especially Zoolander, you said?
Yeah, but not the Royal Tenenbaums. I hate that movie.
Why?
I don't like it.
Because it's a
did
little
serious. Did you like
serious.
Starsky and Hutch?
I did when I first saw it. I did laugh here and there, yeah. I just like their chemistry together. Cracks me up.
I agree.
Well, they're famous now for their team up. I mean, they're like the new Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. They're
yeah.
looking everything together.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number four is a relatively new movie, and I remember not watching this when it first came out because I, kind of like Chris said, hated one of the people that's in it. But when this movie's on, I must stop everything and watch it. And I must watch Paul Rudd and Jason Segel.
Ooh.
And I Love You, Man.
Please say you hate
that.
Segel, right?
Oh, I hate that guy.
Okay, good.
I can't stand
it. But I love Paul Rudd. He's great.
Paul Rudd can walk on water as far as I'm concerned.
If I could walk on water.
Wrong song.
Thank you, Chris. Now I got a picture of you in the Cher outfit.
Oh, now I do too.
That was
thanks.
Eddie Money I was singing, baby.
Oh, yeah.
But it sounded like Cher.
Did it?
Yeah.
It did sound like the Cher song.
I thought it was turned back.
I don't even know. No, not that one.
Yeah. I think you picked the words from one song and put them to the
If I could walk on water.
Oh, you did.
If I could find some way.
That's the Cher's tune.
Is it really?
Yes.
I think it is. I think you're
if
wrong.
If I could turn back time.
That's how you sing it, though.
Yeah, that's
if
the tune.
If I could walk on water.
Same thing, any money. It's the same theme.
That was not what you sang.
So Cher stole his song.
They both suck. What difference does it make?
Bitch. You're both referring to Dr. Doolittle, right? If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals.
Brendan Fraser rocks.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
Welcome to this episode of Non Sequitur.
I hate it.
This is the first time we've had this heated of a debate over our top five list.
Over Eddie Money and
Cher. You're entitled to your opinion, though it's wrong.
All right, well, Paul Rudd and Jason Segel. I'm sorry I brought it up at this point.
How dare you?
That means we're...
Paul Rudd is a very funny person.
I love Paul Rudd, and I met him at a Phillies game.
Oh, yeah.
Well, by met, I mean I accosted him, and he said something to me, so...
You ruined one of his rehearsals.
I think Paul Rudd has the potential to be kind of like almost like a Steve Martin quality of actor. Not necessarily comedian, because he wasn't. No. I think his career could last as long.
Right.
It already has.
He's very versatile.
He's been doing movies for a hell of a long time. Object of My Affection.
Clueless, where it all started, probably.
Yeah, that's like 12 years. When was The Jerk?
Oh.
79.
We're not there yet, Steve. I said he has a future.
The Jerk is as old as me. The other Jerk. Sorry. I'm just... All right. I got nothing.
Let's move on to Christy and her number three.
My number three is one movie that... If it's on TV, I have to see it. And it has the dynamic duo of Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. I Let My Soul Glow with Cuts to Hair.
Very good. Is that, you know, you're Eddie Murphy guy. I'm surprised you don't have anything.
I didn't even think. I thought of his movies, but I couldn't think of a pair until now.
Well, you mentioned Bowfinger. I love Bowfinger, but you didn't like Bowfinger.
Nah, not really.
I gotcha, sucker. Hey, Laker girls. I'm surprised you don't like that part.
He's shaking his head. Nah. You know you have to talk into the microphone, right?
I'm not a big fan of that movie.
Okay. Yeah. So, Christy's number three is Coming to America.
That's an awesome choice, though. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a great one. All right, Matt, what's your number three?
Okay, well, like you mentioned earlier in the show, I'm a big Canadian comedy fan, so had to find room on the list for at least one of them. So I went back to the one that's been with me longest, and that is Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas in Strange Brew.
Great. That's awesome.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Good luck, eh? Good luck.
We got an actual clip there.
Well, they had a song. They had an album. Do you remember the album?
Yes,
they had a Christmas song.
Yeah, the Christmas song.
Yep.
We'll be hearing it any day now.
12 Beers of Christmas.
Every time I think of that movie, I just think of him getting blown up as he drinks all the beer in that vat, and he's huge, and he has to piss it out.
Yeah, take a leak real bad, eh?
Okay, everyone. This record was my idea. Get out. Yep. We talked about SCTV, but you never watched that. What an awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it is. I haven't seen that in a little while. I should dig that up and watch that again.
Yeah. They have all the seasons on DVD. I have a few of the seasons, but what a bed of talent they got out of that show.
It's Rush.
Was that Rush again?
Getty Lee did most of the music for that movie, including the hard theme song.
All right, well, that's an excellent one. I'm glad somebody included them on their list. On to Steve. Steve, what's your number three?
My number three, and I want to say that one has occurred to me while we were talking, so I want to give it a quick honorable mention. I have to say Harvey Korman and Mel Brooks.
Hmm.
And I'm sorry to just gloss over that because you could say a lot. But what I have written, number three, And it's not just because of the sentimental value and the timeliness of it, but the late Leslie Nielsen and the late George Kennedy. Wait, no, George Kennedy's still alive, isn't he?
No.
That's a good question. Sorry.
No, George Kennedy passed away.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, then, I miss them
late
both.
Late O.J. Simpson.
He's the only one of that comedy tripod still knocking him dead. Anyway, no, those guys in Police Squad.
Wait, I gotta interrupt just because my wife did it again.
He's alive.
George Kennedy is not dead. He is alive.
She just says, yep.
Yep. She assumes that he must be dead and states it as a fact. He is not dead. He is still alive.
You know what's
Sorry,
weird?
Steve, I had to do that.
I just That's saw right. him. Thank I saw him maybe 2-3 years ago at a signing. It just hit me. George Kennedy, yeah. Hmm.
What did you get him to sign?
Nothing. I wasn't in line for him.
Oh, right. Of course.
Well, he's in line for, you know, third stormtrooper on the left.
That's right.
Well, didn't you see Leslie Nielsen at one of these things?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you talk to him?
No.
Aren't you sad now?
A little bit. Huge line. He had a line going around, man. Yeah.
Sign my Spy Hard poster.
Last year.
Dracula dead
loving it.
But anyway, obviously for the Naked Gun movies and Police Squad series, those two playing off each other, and I gotta say, the high point for me had to be when Dave, do you know, was it the first one they go to get that tranquilizer dart
from the guy that's like Q
from Ted,
right?
Ted, the lab tech.
Yes.
And yeah, Frank decides to try it out. He shoots into Ed Hawkins' neck, and Kennedy just lets out a little Frank, why? And then falls over. That was a comedy pinnacle. You could get a nosebleed from that.
Always think of them sitting in the car with the eating the pink pistachio nuts with the pink stuff all over the lips.
Two men late in their career getting a hysterical sense of humor.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Only one of
George
them.
Kennedy. I mean, wait, no. He's the one that's alive, Christy.
Shut up.
They would have made a hell of a Flomax commercial.
What about you, Chris? What is your
number three? We're at
three, yes.
Number three. What You Do? Chris Farley and David Spade. And anything they're in fucking cracks me up.
Which was what, like two things?
Three? Yeah.
Tommy Boy and Black Sheep.
Isn't there a third one in there?
Maybe
the whole SNL thing, yeah, got me. I just love, they're just so funny together. I love Chris Farley. Love David Spade.
That guy in a little coat.
I guess the kindest thing you could say is that they had potential to do very, very much more.
Yeah, yes, you're absolutely right. But since
I always pictured that Chris Farley could have played John Candy's son in something had they both
yes.
missed.
That would have been a good team up.
But ever since David Spade died, it's sad. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Chris Farley.
Spade's career.
Spade's still alive.
Spade's got a TV show.
Yeah, just shoot him.
He always has a TV show. That's not saying much.
You have a good point.
True.
Watching those movies, I always loved Farley and was annoyed by Spade.
Yeah, for real?
Yes.
Yeah, I like Tommy Boy a lot, but when Spade just gets on my nerves.
I could do. You're absolutely right. It's I could do without Spade and Tommy Boy and still enjoy it more, maybe.
Yeah. You want to sing along, Chris?
No. I might sing Cher by accident.
Or Eddie Money.
How'd that go again?
Take me home tonight. No, that's not a song.
Take me home tonight. I don't want to wait.
If I could turn back time. Is that Cher?
Yeah, now you got it right.
The image
now you
again.
Got it right.
Image. Image. Oh.
I'm a diva.
You're a diva.
Chris on the bow of an aircraft carrier with tons of men around. Oh, God.
I don't want to see that again.
All right, well, my number three, Matt kind of predicted this when we even brought up the fact that we would have these lists. My number three is Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and Shaun of the Dead. And I mentioned
Excellent.
It before is one of my all-time favorite movies. And to me, it's the fighting thing again. It's is that a common theme on all of our lists?
The bickering?
Yeah, our two guys fight. Yeah. I mean, we haven't had a woman yet. Well.
Oh, we could do women?
Unless you're including Tony Curtis and...
And I do.
But well, David, there's not very much funniness to be wrought out of two guys just or two girls just agreeing with each other for 90 minutes.
We'll take something like it's not on any of our lists, but something like Dumb and Dumber, where it's Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. They're both idiots. They don't. I mean, they do have a fight at some point, but the comedy doesn't come from them fighting.
I think that's why that movie's so tedious.
You find it's
a pretty tedious slog of a movie.
Well, I guess it's a common theme then. If you wanna have funny, you just have your two dudes yell at each other. I mean, even in Matt's movie, Chris and I did it.
Yes,
that's true. Oh, and that is probably one of my favorite scenes.
Matt told us to get lost in the woods and read the crap he wrote down, and
I forgot it all, and we just fought.
Yeah, Chris forgot everything he was supposed to possibly say.
Yes.
Well, even the word foil, you know, it's a sword fighting term. You know, they've got the straight man and the foil, and they've got to like, you know, fence with each other.
Listen to this. This is an educated opinion.
This is the part I'll wish I didn't say later.
I was waiting for Chris to make some kind of sword fighting.
Or just go...
Sword fighting.
Balls.
See?
All right, so I guess we're on to our number two then, and that would be Christy and her number two.
I try to find as many ways to put this movie on a top five list because it is one of my favorite movies.
Porky's.
No.
Revenge of the Nerds.
No. No, actually, it is part of my sci-fi love, anything with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Woo!
And it black. I think that they are the perfect... straight man and just with especially the first one, not necessarily the second one.
The second one's kind of blue,
but the first one with just Will Smith being so out of control ish and Tommy Lee Jones just kind of sit down, son. I really like the chemistry they have in that movie, and that makes it funny for me.
I'm looking forward to the third one.
Yeah,
there's gonna be a third
being,
one
being filmed right now. Yeah.
Yep. Now that Tommy Lee Jones, they don't have to redo, I don't know what you would call that. That's what I didn't like about the second one, is that, like, what Christy just said, the Tommy Lee Jones serious father authority figure over Will Smith was completely lost in the second one because they wiped his mind. So now we're back to that in the third one. So I hope the third one's a lot better.
Should be. It's in 3D.
Well, everything's better in 3D. I mean, Clash of the Titans? Come on.
All right. Well, Matt, on to you and your number two.
Okay, this one is on a couple of my list. Movies, obviously, TV appearances, and I even like the music born of this movie, and that is Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi in The Blues Brothers. Classic on so many different, not levels, but different reasons. The car chase in the mall. Well, the music, like I just mentioned, definitely has a quotability factor. There's probably a lot of quotes in this that people don't realize all these years later are from this movie, like Mission from God, from One. I love this movie. One of those movies that, for me, stands the test of time, probably doesn't, you know, to a lot of people that don't have the affection for it. But for me, it is definitely my number two.
How about Blues Brothers 2000?
Yeah, how was that?
Nope. didn't happen.
Joe Morton and Jim Belushi are on your list?
Nope. That was released in the same reality of the prequels.
You could have put
it always comes down to that.
You could have apocryphal, I say.
You could have put Jar Jar and Anakin on your list. That's pretty funny.
What is this, my hit list?
Go to George Lucas and a blunt object.
Yeah. I'd love to see those two meet head on.
Wow. Well, we always have to find a way to get Matt.
Well, actually, there's
off.
A Star Wars connection in this. Carrie Fisher plays John Belushi's ex-wife in this movie.
There you
or girlfriend. Here's his wife, girlfriend. I think it's girlfriend, actually.
All right, Steve. What's your number two?
My number two. Chevy Chase and Randy Quaid, Nuff Said.
What movie is that?
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yeah.
Independence Day, story? I think. No, I even though I said enough said, I will just say that they are the combo of the slob and the snob, I guess, although it's not like Chevy Chase is exactly like the upper class stereotype, but still he's just trying to be even keeled, and he's got this incredible black sheep, this chromosomeless embarrassment in the back of the, you know, basically a dead trunk branch on the family tree.
And it's amazing how much life is starting to imitate
life,
art. Really. Yeah.
Poor Randy.
You too could end up with Randy Quaid in your backyard.
With a Merry Christmas, shitter's full.
With a hose, we shine shitter's full.
I think what I wrote here, a museum could charge admission just to display Cousin Eddie tormenting Clark Griswold, and people could go in and watch it every day, and I would love it.
Now, do you prefer vacation or Christmas vacation? And I'm not even going to ask about Vegas vacation. What do you prefer?
Good, yes. No, Christmas vacation is definitely at a high point for me, as far as that, those two and the dynamic and incredible scenes just within the house.
When Eddie hits that little windmill thing in the living room to spin it and it falls apart, I know it's coming. I know it's coming 5 minutes before it happens, but it always makes me laugh.
Yeah, you know, it might be like the same thing of why I said that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles holds up, is that the situations, however simple, they just ring so true.
Absolutely. You know? I am in complete agreement with this. We have now come full circle from our previous Seth Green argument.
Circle
you forgive
complete.
Me?
Yes, I do.
Having some boorish a-hole come to visit you in your home and have them be related, it's everyone deals with that.
Yep.
And the smaller the scale of it, the more horrifying. Oh, and it's funny, too.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too.
That's how Christy felt when Chris was staying.
I was trying to think of a way to fit that in. Thank you, Dave.
So was I.
Did Christy
every morning greeting you with, shitter was full.
Did Christy ask if she could take you out to the woods and leave you for dead?
No. Matt did.
No, we have no woods. But he did keep asking me about where the gator was, and I almost showed him.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And then pushed him in.
Here.
All right, well, Chris, that means we're up to you.
Up to me.
Number two.
It's half of what Christy said with Will Smith. But I'm picking Will Smith and Martin Lawrence in both Bad Boys. Because I love I love the action movies, and when there's comedy involved, it makes it even better. I love Martin and Will.
The thing I always appreciated about Bad Boys and the first one, I didn't like the second one, but the first one was that they took, it's almost like Steve Martin was the straight man, almost out of character in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. They made Martin Lawrence the responsible family man.
Yes.
And he played it like perfect.
Yes, yeah.
I love that too. Now, what was Bad Boys 2? I
liked them both. I liked them a lot. I like, is it part two where he, Martin's kid is going to her first dance, I think.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and Will Smith and them come to the door, and what the fuck's, you know, they start cursing at him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Did they do another movie together that wasn't a Bad Boys movie, or is that my imagination?
I don't think so.
Not that I know of.
Any plans for a third Bad Boys?
I think it's in the works, supposedly.
Everything's in the works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this, that Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence life, I thought it would have been like hysterical.
Right.
But I hate that movie.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that had a pretty serious, some somewhat serious parts of
right.
it, too. Maybe that was where they
but
went
But I
wrong.
Thought two of the, you know, the real funny comedians in it.
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes. It seems to happen a lot with Eddie Murphy. I mean, it was Eddie Murphy and Owen Wilson in I Spy. What a train wreck.
True, yes.
So, maybe Eddie Murphy's the problem.
Never.
Oh, come on. Haunted Mansion was... Oh, wait, no. You got a point.
They keep sticking him with people. Robert De Niro and Showtime. I mean, yeah. They just keep sticking him with it.
Just be by yourself and maybe make yourself fatter, and it's a hit.
I was going to say, he was That's pretty it. Good with Dan Aykroyd in 48 Hours, but they weren't really together all that much, were they?
You mean Nick Nolte?
Trading
Places.
Oh,
I'm sorry. You know what? I totally fucked up. Trading Places.
Trading
is what
places.
I meant.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to
so
say this.
What you're saying is Eddie Murphy is like that beta fish where you can't put it in a tank with another beta fish or one will kill the other.
Exactly.
It'll suck the life out of the movie. Yeah.
But one by itself is beautiful.
I don't know. There was that whole movie where he was what an alien.
Meet Dave. That movie sucked.
Well, either one. The one where he had like the little robot. He was a robot. And
Pluto Nash.
Yep.
It was Pluto Nash.
Yeah.
The one sucked. That nobody saw but that Chris probably loved.
No, that sucked.
Tim loved it.
I actually snuck in to see that at the rave, Pluto Nash.
No, I thought it came out. It was something that came out just a couple years ago.
With him and his daughter. Imagine that. That movie sucked too.
Okay. Ew.
Well, I was going to mention this when Matt brought up Blues Brothers, and you mentioned Dan Aykroyd again. Like, Dan Aykroyd used to be funny.
He used to be, yeah.
He's not anymore. Yeah. Like, Eddie Murphy and used to be funny.
He's writing Ghostbusters 3, so that's, please.
Yeah.
He's still a funny person. I just don't think he has any good vehicles for it. And he's too busy worrying, like, dealing with his winery and all that other stuff.
He's, like, the most I've seen him lately has been in these really odd conspiracy documentaries. I don't know what that's
all
about.
I've heard about that, yeah.
He's I don't know if I want to go as far as say he's a spokesperson or slash advocate, but he's been in quite a few documentaries, and I haven't actually seen these, but I've seen that he's in them, documentaries about the moon landing being faked, which is really odd to know that he's a part of. I don't know what that's all about.
Great. He, Randy Quaid, and Jesse Ventura should do a reality show
exactly
together.
Right, yeah.
I have to say, the person who's kind of reinvested themselves that I've really started to appreciate again is Chevy Chase. I like him on Community.
Community's great.
I really do.
That show's fantastic. Yeah.
They just let him go.
Sit in his wheelchair and try to.
Especially when he got the wheelchair.
And get in the bar and he's like at the door. He's bouncing around.
I think putting him and Joel McHale in the same scene is perfect because it's like that could be Joel McHale's character at that age.
Yes. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I guess that means it's my turn, and my number two, is our first woman. You happy about that, Christy?
Hey, all right.
Yay, estrogen.
And it is Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei from My Cousin Vinny, which I love. And I think some of the scenes in that movie are some of the funniest scenes in any movie ever made. And again, it's a lot of fighting, which fighting equals funny.
Yes.
And she's just fantastic. And Pesci can't help but be funny in even the movies where he's frightening. A la Goodfellas. But I love that team up. And My Cousin Vinny is one of my all-time favorite movies. And they are my number two all-time funniest duo.
Okay. That's pretty good. I didn't consider that one. That's a good choice.
So I guess that means we're on to our number one. So, Christy, let's have it. What is your all-time funniest movie comedy duo?
It was hard for me to find just one movie that I liked of this duo because I believe I am spiritually and somehow mentally obligated to always mention Kevin Smith as much as possible. Because ever since I was introduced to Kevin Smith movies with Dogma from Matt.
Thank you.
He got me addicted to Kevin Smith movies.
She didn't even know who Kevin Smith was before Dogma. You know how much she missed in her life?
And then I ended up spending 6.5 hours waiting in line to see him. And then 8 hours in a seat between two comic book guys.
And Chris has seen her wall of Kevin Smith collectibles.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really do. There's something about his comedy that really strikes a chord with me, and definitely the fighting, especially since Silent Bob never really fights back until he just says one line, and that tension that builds throughout each of their movies. I picked Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back because the movie was all about them, but really, honestly, Dogma would be really it for just making me laugh throughout a movie. But Jay and Silent Bob as the crux and the top and the summit of the mountain of Kevin Smith.
Wow.
Mount Kevin.
Would you like to mount Kevin?
Go on.
Wait. Wait a second.
Wait a second.
Did you forget Chris is on this episode?
Well, I will say this. Of all of our lists, this is the only repeat duo. Jay and Silent Bob. So does that make them the funniest all-time duo?
No.
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 Even Christy says no.
No, but there's something that they kind of symbolize a time, and they are in so many of his movies, and I think they're more of a collective. Because if you think about it, they did a lot more than a lot of these teens have done. Mm-hmm. They've been in a lot.
Yeah, you're right. As those characters. It's like Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller play in a lot of movies together, but they're always different people.
Yeah.
These guys are always these guys.
I mean, they've been in Clerks, Clerks 2, Chasing Amy. I mean, everything
they've
he's
been
done.
In a Scream.
Scream 3.
Yeah. They've been in...
They were in Fanboys.
They were in Degrassi. They went all the way up to Canada and did Degrassi. They've been such a part of pop culture for me. It was when they ended up in down at Universal in the Halloween Horror Nights, and when they ended up in the Bill
that
and Ted show,
was the best,
and they were
Halloween
more popular
show.
Than Bill and Ted.
That and I've seen what like 8 Halloween shows now or so.
Yeah.
And that was the best one. So
that was the
far.
Best one because that is for some reason there is something about the two of them that just carries over, and they may not be the funniest, but they resonate stronger than Bill and Ted.
All right. Well, there's Christy's number one. Let's hear Matt's.
I hate following Christy when she has long spiels like that because mine just seems so lame. I like these guys. my number one, I actually picked because I think it's a duo that is starting to be forgotten about, if not forgotten about by a lot of people, certainly younger generations. Let's use an example of a person we all know. Greg probably doesn't know these guys, this duo's movies. And it's unfortunate because there's some good movies, but I think they're going to be forgotten about within the next couple of generations. So for that, to help keep the memory alive, I picked Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder for Silver Streak, Stir Crazy, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Another You, and anything they've done together.
So this was more like to keep the dream alive for these
sort
things.
Of, yeah. I mean, I do like the movies. Don't get me wrong. Okay, maybe number one is pushing it, but I definitely wanted to give them the props they deserve because I don't think a lot of people remember some of these movies.
Right.
Let's never forget.
Well, let's take an informal poll here with Steve. Steve, you're quite a bit younger than all of us. Have you ever seen any of these?
I have seen See No Evil, Hear No Evil. And I thought it was a nice romp, but no, I didn't. At the time, I wasn't thinking like, wow, these guys have great chemistry and have they done other things or they should do other things after this. So,
and that's what's wrong with your generation.
Your prophecy of doom is
get
absolutely
off our
correct.
Lawn.
Prophecy
but,
of doom.
But, you know, some people might say the same thing about, like, Bing Crosby and, what was it, and Jerry Lewis, right?
I remember The Road to Morocco. I was a romper stomper.
That's the spiritual grandfather to Dude, Where's My Car?
That's my number one.
All right. Well, Steve, it's your turn. Let's hear your number one.
Well, this is probably not going to wow anybody because some of their best work, like in Permanent Midnight, for example, is very subtle and not widely seen. But Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo, who have a chemistry going back all the way to the Ben Stiller show of the very early 90s, which didn't last long, but he's taken her along for the ride in the many movies he's written and directed. And so that's a chemistry that's going on 20 years. In the next life, those two will get together and they'll be a Hollywood power couple.
And so you,
they'll do an ensemble movie with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
Janine, who? But so it's kind of a low key pairing, but it suits my comedy tastes. So they're number one.
Very good.
I don't feel so bad about my number one now.
Steve's was so bad. You feel good?
No, I don't think it's any worse than mine. But it's like, well, good. My reasoning is not as stupid.
I gotta go.
All right, Chris. What's your number one?
My number one is a couple, is a pair that you would never even think that they'd be funny, like knock knock jokes. Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, and Lethal Weapons, fucking hysterical.
That makes you feel even better about my choice now.
I think they work great off each other. Mel and Danny, they're, you know, arguing, whimpering, then they cry, they hug. I fucking love it. I love when Mel Gibson calls him a fucking whore.
That's something. Oh, there's something
okay,
else.
Okay, yeah, true. I love action movies and I love comedy on top of it, so that's why I picked Mel and Danny.
They are very funny in those movies.
They are. Part two or three. Four is really good and all, actually.
Four is underrated, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it has the best. That's the one with Jet Li. I think that has the best climactic action scene, that fight between the three of them.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say before I started that was the toilet bomb is an all-time class.
Part two, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's hilarious.
It is. I think they're fucking great.
They just had that kind of chemistry where they could talk and it seemed like what it was supposed to be. Two guys that were very close and willing to die for each other, but busting on each other constantly.
Yes.
That's another movie that's probably quoted that people don't realize the quote is from. The 1-2-3 go. We go on three. A lot of people quote that. I don't think they realize that a big part of that was due to that movie.
Yep. There's a lot of funny set pieces in those movies.
Oh, God, yeah.
The daughter with the condom commercial.
And the condom tree.
In one ear, out the rubber.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That movie convinced me that blacks and whites could get married.
Wow.
You had to say something like that right after our podcast nomination, huh?
Thanks, Steve.
That wasn't bad at all.
There's probably much worse things on Trailer Pod.
Yeah, I was going to say there's
more offensive things.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, I think our number ones have all been kind of interesting, and you guys are certainly going to hate mine.
What is it? Sylvester Stallone and somebody else.
Kurt Russell.
You know, I was toying with putting Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton on my list.
That would have made me feel like my list actually, or my number one made sense.
Well, there would have been nothing wrong with that, mind you. But I did not put them on my list. And instead, I chose Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson from Wedding Crashers. Which I
do love Wedding Crashers, Dave.
Oh, I love Wedding Crashers.
He does.
Wedding Crashers, to me, there are very few movies that I've seen several times in the theater. Back to the Future, I saw 5 times in the theater when I was 13 years old. I saw Wedding Crashers 7 times.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen
any movie 7 times.
Vince Vaughn, to me, is the funniest leading man in movies right now. And I think you could put him with anybody, and it would be funny. I would laugh at him reading the phone book. Not to mention the fact that it's Owen Wilson, who I also respect and think is very funny. But to me, that's my all-time comedy duo. I could watch that movie at any second of any day and laugh like it was the first time I was watching it.
I'm glad you picked this one, because when Chris was talking about... Was it Chris that picked Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson?
Yeah. Yes.
When you picked that, I was about to make a reference to this movie, and then I realized, oh, wait, that wasn't Ben Stiller in that. So I'm glad you brought this up.
No, so you guys hate Vince Vaughn, don't you?
Who, me?
Christy?
I don't hate Vince Vaughn.
I love Vince
Vaughn.
You
mentioned something before.
What was that movie we saw with John, with Christine Bell?
Oh, Getaway.
Was that Couples Retreat or
Couples
something?
Couples Retreat.
Yeah. He was like one of the only things
he was the only thing I liked.
Him and Kristen Bell in a bikini. Those are the only two things that were redeemable in that movie.
And we watched, they were watching Four Christmases today at work.
Yeah.
He's all, everything he does, and it's another guy that when I first saw him, because the first thing I saw him in, like most people, was Swingers, I hated his guts. I found him incredibly annoying.
I was just going to ask you, Dave, did he not start out as more of a dramatic actor?
Yeah, he was in that. Okay. He was in Rudy, and then he was in The Lost World.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Yes, he was in that. Yes, the Jurassic Park crap sequel.
Yeah, he was like the hero, the action hero of The Lost World.
Okay, so I thought he was, but he certainly has shined more in comedy than he ever had in drama.
And the shot for shot Psycho.
He was in that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was funny.
This has probably like the funniest commentary of commentary DVDs.
Yeah, it's just them watching the movie saying just like
just talking.
It's great. It's really great.
Well,
I like Vince Vaughn a lot. That's
okay. Yeah, I thought we did one before, and Christy was poo-pooing Vince Vaughn.
Well, she probably was. She's a woman. She changes her mind every day.
Shut up.
I'm going back and listening to all 18 of your podcasts. I will find it.
Oh, I probably have.
Well, one of my honorable mentions then was also Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau, and anytime they team up, I really enjoyed, especially the movie Maid, which I love. Is just freaking hilarious. But it's funny that you mentioned that Couples Retreat, because I didn't like that movie. I don't think most people did. But he just has a way of talking that even if he's not reading jokes or reciting jokes, he is just a funny guy.
Yep. He's the only thing I really liked in that movie.
And I'm growing to like Jon Favreau.
Actually, yeah. I loved him in Iron Man, too.
Yeah,
I thought he was great in that.
I think partly what I like him for is I think he makes really good director decisions.
Mm-hmm.
As a director, I think I like him. And the fact that he puts himself in his own movies makes me laugh.
All right, well, we all had some pretty good lists. And like I said, the only one that repeated was Jay and Silent Bob.
Woohoo! Props, Kevin Smith.
Yeah, whatever.
from two smart people.
Now, if you just make a funny movie again.
From two smart people.
I don't know if that's possible.
Yes.
All right. Well, while I'm reading the plugs, if you want to call them plugs here, I know that last week we had a panelist pick. So this week we're going to have our randomizer randomly select our movie. So while I'm reading the plugs, I guess we'll get that set up so we can find out what we're going to be watching as chosen by the computer and Christy. But I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to The Gradies, the Great 80s Movie Debate. Please visit our website at gradies.neozaz.com. Check out some of our earlier podcasts. This is our 19th episode, and as we've mentioned before and in any of our other little infomercials and whatnot, we have been nominated for a 2010 podcast award, and we'd like to thank again all the people that helped us get nominated. We really appreciate it. All the feedback and support that we've gotten from our listeners, not only from downloading the show, but from our Facebook page, which you can also become a fan on our Facebook page. Just search Gradies. Lots of stuff on there, and we have a small but loyal and wonderful following. So we appreciate all that they've done to get us nominated. To vote for us at this point, and you can vote once a day, you go to podcastawards.com. And we are listed under the movies and film category. And while you're there, don't leave the other things blank. Go down to the comedy, or actually up to the comedy category, and vote for Trailer Pod Boys, our partner podcast, which Matt is the co-host of.
Yes, I am.
Along with...
In fact, you leave everything else blank after you take care of that category, actually.
That's right. Well, the Gradies is up for under the movies and film, and we're under some stiff competition. But... I guess you could say we're the underdogs of that category.
You guys are under the GLBT category, too. Is that all right?
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
You're much better than cocktails and cream puffs. That is for sure.
And better than bend over and taken. I almost voted for that just to vote for it.
Well, the other
speechless.
I'm just like I don't know where to go from there, but I will say this. You can also reach us on our Google Voice mailbox at 215-804-9082. So please give us a call, tell us what you think of the show, anything you want. We'd love to hear from anybody on any subject. Don't forget to check out neozaz.com for other original programming, including links to the Trailer Pod Boys. And like I said, we appreciate any votes that we get in the podcast awards. You can vote once a day, and the voting is over on December 15th. So, that being said, I think we're about ready to randomly select our next movie.
Yes.
All right.
Now, I'll be honest. I'm going to be honest.
You're going to be honest?
I clicked the thing twice.
Why start now?
I clicked the thing twice because there's no way I'm fucking doing Mac and Me.
What was it? Mac and Me?
Mac and Me. Whatever the alien movie with the kid. I went right over it. I ain't doing it.
All right, well. Matt, are you ready?
Yep. Yep, I got the movie. Yep.
Okay.
And we can roll again too if you like.
Well, it's up to Christy. Christy holds all the cards here.
She does.
Damn, I pissed her off. Shit.
While they're getting that ready too, I'd like to also thank Steve for sitting in with us. Steve, this is your second foray into the podcasting world. Steve is a stand-up comedian. And Steve, would you like to plug anything while you're here?
I would like to plug Chris. Right where it would hurt the most.
Yes.
No, the only thing, as with last time, Dave, I appreciate it. I would say that every Wednesday I co-host Steel Trap Trivia. That's at the Bethlehem Brewworks in Bethlehem. This is ongoing now. Future generations probably won't be able to find it, but come play. It's all kinds of trivia, popular culture, history, lit, science, all that. The full range of useless knowledge. And I do it with another comedian. And it's a hysterical time. We've grown a following as well in the last 2 years. Check it out. Good drinks and fun times.
Yes, and you can also find Steel Trap Trivia on Facebook, so you can find out all the goings on for there. And if you live in the Delaware Valley, or even if you don't, you know, get yourself a plane ticket. It's really worth
it. I have visited the event on my trips home, and as a dare I say beer connoisseur, it's not only worth it for the trivia, which is a lot of fun, but they got some good in-house brews to check out if you like microbrews. You know, definitely check it out for that as well.
Thanks, guys. Can I also just say it's like there are about three miracles that I managed to make it on tonight: getting out of work, finding a microphone, and then installing this. How do you say Skype? Which I have.
That's how you say it.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I'm a saint now. Like, three miracles in one night. Glad to be here. Have me back anytime.
I'd also like to point out that at Steel Trap Trivia, when Matt was here, we won.
That's true.
I would like to point that out. And what was our trivia name, Chris? Do you remember?
The Olivia Newton.
It was O Trivia Newton John.
Oh my god! You did not tell me that, honey.
I didn't remember that.
Yes, that our team consisted of Chris, Matt, myself, and Dave from Trailer Pod Boys, and it was our first time there. And yes, we were victorious. Thank you.
The check should have been in the mail quite some time ago.
All right. Well, if the plugs are over, I think we're about ready.
It took a long time.
It did take a long time. I blame you, Steve. But no, thank you for joining us and going through the hassle of doing what you needed to do to get on here. We appreciate it and hope you will join us again.
Well, the hard part's over. Now I could bust in anytime.
That's true. We need to have you back when we do a Stallone movie because, Christy, I don't know if you know this, but Steve is the founder and president of the Stallone Club for Men.
Oh, Jesus.
It's for women, too.
Women, too?
Yeah, there's a few women.
Are they manly women? Do they have man hands? Do they mud wrestle in beer?
What? All right, it's mostly Dolly Parton.
It's Dolly Parton. And Steve has seen Rhinestone, and without giving too much away, Steve, in a few words, what do you think of Rhinestone?
Rhinestone is was not one of the hardest to sit through. Actually, it was rather enjoyable, but that doesn't make it good.
Did Dave pay you in any way, shape, or form?
No, and that is another person I'd like to point out because our also panelist Karen panelist Karen also has sat through that movie and enjoyed it.
Mm. I've been there and back, my friends. I watched everything he ever did.
He did?
Yeah.
Including the naughty bits.
That's right.
Oh, God.
Yep. Oh, my. Can we get to the randomizer before we get on this conversation?
All right.
Sorry.
I think we're ready. Chris, are you ready to click?
Yes.
Clickety click it. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
It gets a whimper.
Well, as long as it's not Mac and me, but.
I have a feeling. Well,
how about Roger and me?
You're gonna read the tagline here?
Hopefully my thing don't cut out. Ready?
All right.
When these three oddballs try to play hardball, the result is totally screwball. A comedy with bats and balls.
Meatballs.
Major League.
Correct.
Major League.
Christy, yeah.
All right, our tagline is, on the other side of drinks, dinner, and a one-night stand lies a terrifying love story.
Fatal Attraction?
Yep.
Yep.
Mm. Interesting. Ooh.
So you've got to choose between those two?
Christy will choose, and if Christy feels like neither are suitable, we will click it again.
Well, we've been on the lighter side. We've done a lot of comedies. It's about time we do something that's an iconic drama.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Boiling Rabbits is in order for Fatal Attraction.
All right.
Fatal Attraction.
There's nudity in that, Chris. You'll like it.
I like nudity.
Have you ever seen it?
And it's not all Michael Douglas's, too.
Yeah, it's
damn
not just
it.
Michael Douglas. This will be our Michael Douglas tribute episode.
Yes.
I love Michael Douglas. All right. Well, Christy has chosen.
Yes.
The Oracle of the Gradys.
What's our top five list going to be on that one?
Well, we can discuss that off the air. We don't need to bore the listeners any longer.
No. Best tortured animal scenes.
Oh, no.
Can we give another hour of plugs? That'd be entertaining.
Look, you're the one who had to chime in with, yes, I've been to the trivia and the beer's great.
That's true. I'm sorry. I will not promote your events anymore. Trust me.
I'm sorry. We fought.
You could catch me on I-4 in the morning commute between 8:30 and 8:45.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening to The Gradys, and please join us on our next episode where we will be discussing Fatal Attraction.
And please vote.
And please vote for us in the 2010 Podcast Awards. We're not going to beg anymore, honestly.
No. I haven't begged yet. Please vote for us.
All right.
Christy, take care of that cold.
I'm going to try.
Yes.
And or cocaine habit, whichever you've got going.
Wow.
Wait, I'm way too sleepy to be on coke.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening to The Gradys. And we leave you with the immortal words of Neil Page, who said,
and by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener. You go away. You take a piece of me with you.
Is he dead yet?
No.
Oh, no.
I actually read.
Christy, your line is yep.
Yep. Yep. Definitely.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, definitely dead.
Yeah, died, yeah.